told him at that time that I was leaning toward preaching a lesson that I had worked up based upon an article I'd seen in Faith and Facts just a few years back. In this article, one of the sections was entitled, "Does 1 Corinthians chapter 14, 34 and 35 apply to the modern day assembly?" You might be turning there because we're going to talk a good bit about that passage tonight. That is the lesson. It's about that passage tonight. That's almost an exact quote of what was in that magazine. Does 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, and this last part is correct, apply to the modern day assembly? That's the way the fellow put it, the preacher. Now his conclusion in that article was that this passage does not apply today. Now the way he put that, it does not apply to the modern day assembly. Now it may surprise you to know that probably at least half of our brethren, I'm talking about the non-institutional brethren, believe that it does not apply today. That 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35 does not apply today, does not apply to the modern day assembly. Let's start by reading that passage in 1 Corinthians 14, verses 34 and 35. "Let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak, but they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. And if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is a shame for women to speak in the church." Like I said, a lot of our brethren don't believe that this passage applies today. Now why? Why don't they think it applies today? We're going to go into some of the reasons. And if you'll excuse me, most of the lesson will be taken up with giving some of their reasons why they think it doesn't apply and showing that they're just mistaken about it. But I wonder myself, what are the motives of why people are saying this? And perhaps, and Mr. Sutton may remember this, perhaps it came from when people were trying to answer the No Bible Class brethren. The No Bible Class brethren tried to use this passage and apply it to the classes. And then some of our brethren falsely said, well, this doesn't even apply today. And that was their way of getting around the argument. They were arguing for the truth. I'm talking about our brethren was, because Bible classes are authorized. But they were using a false argument in doing so by just saying it didn't apply. Also, I have just this suspicion that this has something to do with the covering issue. Okay, now, one of the primary reasons that people don't think it applies today is because it's in a setting when spiritual gifts are talked about. And they say, well, see, the spiritual gifts don't apply today, therefore this verse doesn't apply today. It may have something to do with the covering, because a lot of our brethren want the covering, taught in 1 Corinthians 11, not to apply today. And they'll say, well, see, you got a spiritual gift, it mentioned in 1 Corinthians 11, prophesying. Therefore, none of that chapter applies. Well, then to be consistent, if they're going to say that, take that false view. They've been driven to taking the same kind of view in 1 Corinthians 14. The chapter talks a good bit about spiritual gifts, and to be consistent, they just have to throw the whole chapter out, including verses 34 and 35, even those two verses have nothing to do with spiritual gifts. But be it as it may, they say it doesn't apply. And we're going to see some reasons as we go along why it's important, very important, to understand that it does apply today. And that's really what I'd like to do to begin with. Before we get into some of the reasons they say it doesn't apply, I would like to talk about this passage and what it teaches, and also another passage that I believe is related, 1 Timothy 2, 11 and 12, though not the same. I would like to talk about these two passages and what they teach, first of all. Okay? And really, that wouldn't take very long. It wouldn't take very long just to read these passages and tell what they teach, but what becomes a problem is when people try to teach things false about them, and you have to deal with that. First of all, let's talk about, when does 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 apply? I mean, in this case, in what situations and in what circumstances? Well, the text itself tells us. It says, "Let your women keep silence in the churches." Some translations will say in the assemblies. This is talking about the assembly. At the end of verse 35, it says, "For it is a shame for women to speak in the church," or in the assembly. Now, we're talking about the church assembly here. Not the church building necessarily, but the church assembly. You can have a church assembly under a tree somewhere. You wouldn't even have a church building. But if it's the church assembly, then this passage applies. The women cannot speak. verse 23 nails it down pretty good. It says, if therefore the whole church be come together into one place. That's when this passage applies. When the whole church comes together into one place. Wigram Green, a Greek concordance I have at home, defines this word that's translated in the church as an assembled church. So you can have the East Albertville Church in existence even when it's not assembled. You're the East Albertville Church Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, even if you're just at home somewhere. You exist as a congregation even at that time. But then the church is assembled right now. The church has come together, like verse 23 says, if therefore the whole church be come together into one place. Well, sometimes you have the church and it's not assembled in one place. Sometimes they're not assembled at all. This applies when the church is come together into one place in the church assembly. Now, does it apply in what we call the Bible classes, like y'all had this morning at 9:30? Does it apply? No, it doesn't apply because the whole church is not all together into one place. They're not all together into one place. To help you see this, let's look in the same chapter at verses 27 and verse 31. You'll remember that, Mr. Hutto describes the summary for this chapter as regulating spiritual gifts. And in verse 27 and 31, he's regulating tongues and prophecy. He says about tongues in verse 27, he says, let it be by two or at the most by three, and that by course, and let one interpret. That phrase, that by course, just means one at a time. In other words, when the tongue speakers were supposed to speak, they were to do it one at a time. And we all know that makes sense in light of verse 40, let all things be done decently and in order. If you have two people speaking at once, it's not going to be edifying. It's going to be confusing. It's going to be hard to understand what they're trying to say. Verse 31, he says the same thing about the prophets. For that you may all prophesy one by one, that they may all learn and all may be comforted. And so the Bible teaches in this chapter that when you're in this circumstance, when the whole church is all together in one place, you're only supposed to have one speaker at a time. Now, if this applied to the Bible classes like we had this morning at 9:30, that means we'd have to have one speaker trying to teach all the different Bible classes in all the different rooms at one time. And it would be wrong to have more than one. But we can see on the surface of it, that doesn't make any sense. In effect, if this applied to the Bible classes, it would make the Bible classes unscriptural. It would make them unscriptural because you're only, in whatever circumstance this applies, you're only supposed to have one speaker at a time. Now that helps us to understand because we can see the point of why we're supposed to have one speaker. Because when you're all together in one place like we are now, or like this congregation did at 10:30 this morning, you would need to only have one speaker or else it wouldn't be edifying, it would be confusing. But when you're in the Bible classes, you have a speaker for each class. It's not confusing. This passage does not apply. They're not all together into one place, but we are all together in one place right now, and that's when this passage applies. Let me make this point. It sometimes comes up. Sometimes, especially when you have a small congregation, I used to go out for 5 or 6 years and preach once a week over at Piney Chapel out from Decatur, and the church was small enough there that most of the time, they only had one class during what they call the Bible class times. Okay? And so, in effect, they just had one adult class. The whole church was together in one place. Now, they called it a Bible class, but the whole church was together into one place. Does this verse apply then? Well, certainly. Because Paul said that whenever the whole church comes together into one place, even if we call it a Bible class, that's still the church assembled. And therefore, this passage applies and the women cannot speak. In actuality, we're in a Bible class right now. I'm set up, at least for this period, as the teacher and you're the students. This is a Bible class. We don't normally call it a Bible class, but the church assembly is a Bible class. It's one Bible class at a time. But it just so happens that the whole church is in this one Bible class. When that is the case, whether it's at 9:30 on Sunday morning or 10:30 at Sunday morning, if the whole church is all together in one place, the women are not to speak. So hopefully that'll help us some on when does this passage apply. And I know you know, because many of you know me, that if you have some concerns about anything I say in this lesson or questions about this point or any point I make in this lesson, I'll be happy to talk to you afterwards about anything that I've said. Next, let's move along to 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35. What exactly does it forbid? What does it forbid? Well, it certainly forbids a woman from being a preacher. And what we usually mean by preaching is somebody that comes up behind the pulpit and delivers a sermon, like in the church assembly, for example. Okay? It certainly forbids a woman from preaching, because I have yet to see a person, man or woman, get up and preach a sermon without speaking. Have you? And this verse says that a woman is not to speak in the church. You can't preach without speaking. Therefore, it forbids that. On our radio program that we have every second, third, and fourth Sunday mornings from 8 to 8:30, it's a call-in question and answer program on WEUP, 1600 on the AM dial. This comes up quite often. I sometimes kid that if things are going kind of slow and you want somebody to call in with a question, you just, all you gotta do is just say, women preachers, and all of a sudden the phone will ring off the hook. You have a lot of people in that area who are women preachers or who have women preachers where they worship. And if you start talking about women preachers, the phone will ring off the hook. There are a lot of churches, I don't know why this is, but it seems like, and of course I'm speaking of churches in all the denominations of all the churches, I would just guess that at least 95% of them allow women to speak in the church. They allow women preachers. Not all of them, but I'd say about 95%. If you just took all the congregations, say, in Madison County, where Huntsville is. Yet this verse is so clear. This verse is so clear on this matter. When I'm in home Bible classes with people, I bring this up many times and say, you just tell me, does this say that women preachers are right or wrong? Almost every one of them can see it right off the bat. It's not ambiguous at all. So clear. Why is that? Why do we have so many churches allowing women preachers, yet we have such a clear verse against it? So this verse, without a doubt, does condemn a woman preaching the sermon. But I want to point out something else to you, and that is it condemns more than that. Because it doesn't just say it's a shame for a woman to preach the sermon in the church. It doesn't say that. It says at the end of verse 35, it's a shame for women to speak in the church. At the beginning of verse 34, let your women keep silence in the churches. And then I want you to notice this one particular phrase in verse 35. And if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home. Now I realize that in some situations, Mr. Sutton may be preaching a sermon. He might ask a question. Asking a question is, in some ways, a way of teaching a class. Jesus did it on many occasions. That was a way of teaching. But in this case, that wasn't the reason for the question. The reason for the question in this case was for the woman to learn. Here's a woman up there preaching the sermon and she's going to ask a question. No, this is basically the woman in position as a student and she's going to ask a question. See? Paul says, if they want to learn something, not if they want to teach something, if they want to learn something, let them ask their husbands at home. And here's what I'm getting at. Not only is it wrong for the woman to preach the sermon, to lead the class in the church assembly, as I'm doing now, but it's wrong for her to even ask a question, like from her seat. If she wanted just to raise her hand and ask a question where the whole assembly could hear it, that would be wrong. That would be wrong. Now, that'll tell us a lot of things. That tells us a lot of other things are wrong other than just preaching the sermon. Now, most of our brethren, and again, I'm talking about the non-institutional brethren, believe that this passage teaches that it's wrong for the woman to preach the sermon, that is, the ones that still think it applies. But they stop at that. They will allow a woman, for example, to make an announcement to the church. To speak to the church assembly, they will allow that. If it's in the form of announcement, as long as she's not preaching the sermon. But this passage condemns that. This passage says even if she wants to ask a question, she's basically to do it at home, not in the church assembly. So she's not to speak to the church assembly. Now, if I don't believe it's saying that Carol, my wife, couldn't whisper to Heath in the seat next to her that if you don't straighten up, I'm going to take you out back. It's not saying that, but if Carol were to speak, I'm talking about my Carol, were to speak to the church assembly, either from down here, up here, or even from her seat, even if it were just in the announcement period. Like, does anybody know what time that meeting over at Chapman Acres in Huntsville was supposed to start on Friday night? If she knew and were to speak up and say, well, I know it's at 7:30, she would be violating this passage. No, she's not preaching the sermon. We're going to get into 1 Timothy 2. No, she's not teaching over man when she does that. She's violating this passage. She's not to speak in the church, not even to ask a question. Now that you get it, you can understand, hopefully, to the best of my speaking ability, what I'm trying to say, let's talk about some other things that it would forbid. Well, it would forbid, as I've said, for a woman making announcement to the church assembly. We've had that happen over at North Huntsville before. A woman's done that. That's wrong. In some places where you have singing, we'll ask ahead of time, we'll try to get numbers to be led by the different men during the singing. Nothing wrong with that. But sometimes I've seen it where right in the middle of the assembly, the man, let's say they get halfway through, and the man who's kind of directing the thing will say, "We have any other song requests?" And I've seen women speak up and say, 431 or something like that. But she couldn't do that. If she has a song request, she'd have to give it to him ahead of time. Once the church assembly has started, she could not speak up to the church assembly and make that song request, because the Bible says it's a shame for a woman to speak in the church, even to ask a question. There's a controversy that has come up mainly among our institutional brethren, but it's also among our brethren. I appreciate so much a lot of our brethren going to Russia and China and places like that, but they've run into a little problem. Sometimes they have a hard time finding a translator, and some of them, including our brethren, have used women as translators. Okay? They shouldn't be doing that, because the women, when they're translating in the church assembly, they're speaking in the church assembly. And the Bible says it's a shame for a woman to speak in the church. Now, sometimes at the end of services, women come forward and want to confess their sins. And I think rightly so. We don't let the women confess directly their sins to the congregation. Sometimes we let them whisper it to the preacher on the front pew, and then he relates to the congregation what the sins that she was confessing. I think that's the way it ought to be done, because if she were to stand up in front of the congregation and confess her sins, she would be speaking in the assembly, and that's forbidden. Let me add this. Also, sometimes at the end of services, we have women come forward wanting to be baptized, and they need to confess Christ before they're baptized with the mouth. Romans 10, verse 10 teaches that, and Acts 8, 37 gives us an example of that. That should not be done in the assembly either. A woman should not stand up in front of the assembly and confess Christ with the mouth, because then she would be speaking in the assembly. And that is forbidden by this passage. That ought to be handled just like the confession of sins. She could do that, confess to the preacher, whisper it to the preacher, and then he could tell the whole congregation that she had confessed Christ. After all, the eunuch only confessed to one person, as far as we know, Philip in Acts 8:37. There's nothing in the Bible, as far as I know, that connects the confession of Christ with the assembly, or that requires it there. So I want to leave this point with this thought that 1 Corinthians 14:34 and 35 doesn't just forbid preaching the sermon. It also says that the woman is not to even ask a question in the assembly. Now, let's hold our hand there, and let's turn over to 1 Timothy 2, verses 11 and 12, because I want us to talk about what 1 Timothy 2 teaches, and I also, at the same time, I want us to compare it to 1 Corinthians 14. I think it's important to understand what 1 Timothy 2 is teaching, and then I think it's also very important to understand the differences between 1 Timothy 2 and 1 Corinthians 14. Because I think a lot of our brethren are trying to say that they teach exactly the same thing on every point. And when they say that, they're losing a lot of the meaning of both passages. In 1 Timothy 2, verses 11 and 12, the Bible says, "Let the women learn in silence with all subjection. But I suffer not, or I allow not, a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence." A woman is not to teach over, nor to usurp authority over the man. Let's again ask the question, as we did with 1 Corinthians 14, under what circumstances does this apply? When does this apply? You know, some people mistakenly believe that this only applies in the church assembly, 1 Timothy 2. Or they might say it only applies in spiritual matters. So they would say a Bible class or something like that would also apply. But you know, that's not true. This passage applies everywhere. Everywhere. That very word is used in verse 8 in the context. He says, "I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting." And so in this context, we're not talking about the church assembly like we were doing in 1 Corinthians 14. We're talking about everywhere, anywhere. Look at verses 9 and 10. "In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works." Women ought to be dressed modestly. That's what that passage is teaching, right? Does that only apply in the church assembly? Does that only apply in Bible classes? Obviously not. That applies everywhere. And so when the Bible tells the woman in 1 Timothy 2, verse 12, not to teach nor to usurp authority over the man, that's not talking about just in the church assembly or just in Bible classes. That's talking about everywhere. That's talking about everywhere. And so it would forbid a woman from teaching or usurp authority over the man by leading a Bible class. And that's why at 9:30 here this morning, I feel confident that you didn't have any women leading Bible classes where men were included in the Bible, those Bible classes. Perhaps you had women teaching classes that had, it was only women's classes or children's classes. But I'm confident you didn't have a woman leading a class where men were involved in the class, because they're not to teach over the man. So it does apply to Bible classes, and it does apply to the church assembly. But you know what else it would apply to? Like school classes, like a college class. Here you say you had a woman teaching mathematics at college. Well, it's likely there's going to be some men there. Well, she's going to be teaching over those men. She shouldn't do that. There's nothing in this passage that would restrict this to just spiritual things like Bible teaching. Now, it would apply to any kind of teaching. She's not to teach nor usurp authority over the man, even in a college class. You know, at the workplace, this would mean that a woman could not be a boss over women, that a man could not be a boss over women, because she would be usurping authority over the man. At the workplace, like where I work, I'm a computer programmer. If I were a woman, which I'm not, I could not be a manager over men, because I would be usurping authority over men. I don't believe I could even, if I were a woman, lead a meeting at work, even if I weren't the manager, but lead a meeting when such meeting included men. Just like we recognize this in Bible classes, you wouldn't have a woman leading the class when men were included. Well, 1 Timothy 2 applies to work, to anywhere. Then you wouldn't want to have a woman. And so I'm speaking to you ladies now who might be out there working. You wouldn't want to have a woman leading a meeting at work where men were included. You know, a lot of these things would just be taken care of right off the bat if we would just obey Titus chapter 2, verse 5, where it says that a wife ought to be a keeper at home. If the wife would just be a keeper at home, like the Bible says, and when the Bible says something, that means it's a sin if you do anything else, then you wouldn't have all these problems of women being managers over men or women leading meetings at work with men included. You wouldn't be violating those passages, 1 Timothy 2, because you would have been a keeper at home like you were supposed to be anyway. Something else that this passage in 1 Timothy 2 I'm talking about would forbid would be like a woman being mayor or governor or president, because in either of those three cases, she would be leading over men, and therefore she would be usurping authority over men. And 1 Timothy 2 verse 12 forbids that. The next thing I'd like to do, I mentioned before, I'd like to notice that 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 and 1 Timothy 2 are not teaching the same thing. And here's what I mean by that. 1 Corinthians 14 applies under more restrictive circumstances than 1 Timothy 2. We've already mentioned that. 1 Corinthians 14 only applies to the church assembly, whereas 1 Timothy 2 applies everywhere. But now 1 Corinthians 14 is more restrictive. It says that a woman cannot even speak, whereas 1 Timothy 2 says that a woman cannot teach over or usurp authority over the man. So if a woman was at home, not in the church assembly, she could speak, but she could not teach over a man. Do you see the difference there? There's a big difference. Now, a lot of our brethren would like them to be the same, and I'll tell you why. Because if they can make 1 Corinthians 14 and 1 Timothy 2 the same, then they can have women in the church assembly do anything except preach the sermon. They can make announcements, make song requests, all of that other stuff that I mentioned. They could do all of that. They just couldn't preach the sermon, because really that's all 1 Timothy 2 would restrict in the church assembly, was be preaching the sermon, teaching over the men. And so that's why they want to throw out, in effect, that part of 1 Corinthians 14 and just say, well, that's just like 1 Timothy 2. 1 Corinthians 14 is just telling that a woman cannot teach over a man. You see, but that's not what it's saying. It's saying it cannot speak. It's more restrictive than that. And then another reason they'd like the two passages to teach exactly the same thing is because they know that 1 Corinthians 14 applies in the church assembly, or they might say these religious circumstances, and they want 1 Timothy 2 to only apply to either just the assembly or just spiritual circumstances. That way, in the workplace, you can have a woman be a boss over men. Or at college, you could have a Christian lady teaching a math class with men in the class. After all, if 1 Timothy 2 only applies to the church, well, you could do it out there in the world. See, that's not what it's saying. 1 Timothy 2 applies everywhere. 1 Corinthians 14 only applies in the church assembly. 1 Corinthians 14 is more restrictive in that it says they can't even speak. 1 Timothy 2 is not as restrictive. It says they just can't teach over or usurp authority over. It doesn't say they can't speak. Obviously, they can speak outside the assembly. The Bible teaches in Titus 2, for example, that the aged women are to teach the younger women, so they can speak under some circumstances. You know, our brethren understand that 1 Timothy 2 applies at home when you're talking about how that women need to be in subjection to men. They all believe that 1 Timothy 2 teaches that a wife needs to be in subjection to her husband at home. Yet when it comes to teaching and things like that, they want to say it only applies in the church assembly. Next thing I'd like to do is turn your attention back again to 1 Corinthians 14 and talk about some of the reasons that people are saying that 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 does not apply today, and show you at least, you'll have to be the judge for yourself, but what I believe to be proof that their conclusions are inaccurate. Okay? As I mentioned, the primary thing they like to say is that 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 doesn't apply today because it's in the same chapter with a bunch of discussion of spiritual gifts, and the spiritual gifts don't apply today. We know that from 1 Corinthians 13. Therefore, they just kind of just throw out the whole chapter, or at least whatever parts they don't like. And sure enough, they throw out verses 34 and 35 just because it's in the same discussion with spiritual gifts. But you know, they don't do the same thing with Acts 20 verse 7, do they? We use that to show that we eat the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. But you know, in that passage, Paul preached a sermon. And it's almost assuredly that Paul's sermon there was inspired. Sometimes people say, well, you can't duplicate the assembly of 1 Corinthians 14. Well, we can't duplicate the assembly of Acts 20 verse 7 either. We don't have anybody like Paul that can preach an inspired sermon like Paul did in Acts 20 verse 7. Yet we understand that the Lord's Supper, being on the first day of the week, doesn't have anything to do with Paul being inspired. 1 Corinthians 14, yeah, it talks about the spiritual gifts, but verses 34 and 35 says the woman is not to speak in the church. It has nothing to do with the spiritual gifts, necessarily. In verses 27 and 31, we've pointed out, when you're talking about the tongue speakers and the prophets, it says they ought to go one at a time. We don't have tongue speakers and prophets today, but I think we all understand that in principle that applies today. Don't you understand that even though today we don't have inspired speakers, that this passage would teach us that in principle we only ought to have one speaker at a time? Well, sure. So there's a lot of things in this chapter that apply today. Verse 40 certainly applies today. Let all things be done decently and in order. Does that apply today? Our brethren would say that it would. Another thing our brethren like to do is they like to look at, for example, verse 28, where it tells the tongue speaker that there is no interpreter, let him keep silence in the church. And then when it's talking about the prophets, at the end of verse 30 it says, if there's another prophet speaking, you need to hold your peace. Okay, so it says, if you're a tongue speaker or a prophet, if somebody else already doing it, you be silent. You hold your peace. That's the same Greek word that's in verses 34 and 35, let your women keep silence. And they say, see, the Bible told them to keep silent, but now after the other tongue speaker was through, then he could go ahead and speak. So even though he told them to keep silent, then he could go ahead and speak later, so the women. They reason, since it's the same Greek word, that the women could go ahead and speak. No, what's going on here is that if I'm a potential tongue speaker, but there's somebody else already speaking in tongues, I'm supposed to be silent while he's speaking. During that time, while he's speaking, I am supposed to be silent. Now, what about the woman? She's supposed to be silent, but not just while another tongue speaker is speaking. She's supposed to be silent in the church the whole time, in the whole time of the church assembly. In verse 34, it said, it is not permitted unto them, the women, to speak, but they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. Now, many of our brethren play off this phrase, as also saith the law, and they want to try to turn back in the Old Testament to somebody like Deborah or something like that, and try to show in one or two cases where they think that women were speaking in the Old Testament assembly. So they say, see, in the Old Testament, they could speak in the assembly. And this says, as also saith the law, certainly the women can speak today. But you know something has to be wrong with that, because that contradicts what the passage is saying. It says that a woman is not to speak in the church assembly. Now, what I want you to notice is that it says it's not permitted for women to speak, but they're commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. It's not saying that the law also taught that they were to be silent is saying that the law taught that they were to be under obedience. The law taught that the woman was to be under obedience, the old law and the new law, under obedience to men, I take it. That doesn't necessarily mean that all the applications of that obedience are the same today as they were then. For example, weren't men in the Old Testament supposed to be under obedience to God under the Old Testament? Yes. Are men today to be under obedience to God in the New Testament? Yes. Does that mean that we're to be obedient to all the exact same laws and everything? No. It just means that both of them are supposed to be obedient to God under both covenants. Likewise, under both covenants, the women were to be obedient to the men. That doesn't mean that all the laws regarding that obedience are the same. I may not know everything about the Old Testament, but I do know that in the New Testament, the women are not to speak in the church assembly. That's the law. That's God's law, the new law. Sometimes people will take this phrase, they're not permitted to speak, but they're commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. They'll say, well, so that means that the woman can speak as long as she's under obedience. So she can speak as long as she knows she's under obedience. That's not what it's saying. It's saying the way she is to be obedient in this particular case is by not speaking. It's not saying that she can speak as long as she's under obedience. It's saying that the way she needs to be under obedience in this particular case is by not speaking. That's what it's saying. Now, the one that y'all have probably heard the most often is that the your women in verse 34 is only referring to the prophets' wives. And therefore, since we don't have any prophets today, we don't have any prophets' wives, and so this doesn't apply anymore. And they take that because, if you'll notice, verse 29, I guess, is where it begins, through about verse 32, we have a discussion of the prophets. And so then verse 34 says, let your women keep silence in the churches. So they say, see, that's the prophets' wives. He's just been talking about the prophets. He says, your women. He's talking about the prophets' wives. We don't have any prophets today, therefore we don't have any prophets' wives. This doesn't apply today. Well, I think they're missing it on that. First of all, I think many of your translations, if they mark where new paragraphs begin, they mark verse 34 as a new paragraph. But of course, that's just the translators thought that. But let me ask you a question. When I'm talking to you all right now, if I were to say, you're driving your cars too fast, who would I be talking to? I'd be using the second person plural, talking to you. Generally, you think I'd be talking to all of you, right? If I said, you're driving your cars too fast. But if I said, now the deacons, they need to spend less time watching pro football. You notice if I were to talk about a group of the group, I'm just making hypothetical examples. I don't know if the deacons watch pro football here or not. I would use a third person. I noticed I said, you're driving your cars too fast, but now the deacons, they're watching too much pro football. They, third person. You see that? And that's really what Paul does. If you go all the way back through the whole book, you'll see that he's talking to the brethren as a whole, the Corinthians as a whole. Notice 1 Corinthians 1 verse 2, unto the church of God which is at Corinth, to them that are sanctified in Christ Jesus. Who's he talking to? All the Christians there. Now let's look specifically at chapter 14. Look at verse 6. Now, brethren, who's he talking to? He's talking to all the Corinthian brethren. If I come unto you speaking with tongues. So second person, he's talking about the brethren as a whole. Verse 20 of the same chapter. Brethren, be not children in understanding, howbeit in malice, be ye children. Second person, he's talking to all the brethren as a whole. Verse 26, how is it then, brethren, when ye come together? Second person, he's talking to the brethren as a whole, not a group of the brethren, not just a smaller group. Look at verse 39, wherefore, brethren, covet to prophesy and forbid not to speak with tongues. He's talking to all of the brethren. So generally, there may be some exceptions to this, but generally, when Paul's using the second person here, that means I'm telling something to the person I'm talking to. He's talking to all of them. That's who the book is written to. But when he talks to the tongue speakers or the prophets, just a small group out of them, he generally uses the third person. Verse 28, but if there be no interpreter, let him keep silence in the church. So he's not talking about the whole group. He's just talking about one person. So he uses the third person. So when you get down to verse 34 and he says, you're women, that's second person, isn't it? possessive, second person. Who's he talking to? When you use the second person, that means you're talking to the, you're applying this to the people you're talking to. Who's he talking to? He's not talking to the prophets. When he talked to the, he didn't really talk to the tongue speakers and the prophets. He talked to the Corinthians about them. He talked about them in the third person. Here he says, let your women keep silence in the churches. He's not talking about the prophets' wives. He's talking about the Corinthian women, all the Corinthian women. You see that? If you just go by the what's second person and what's third person, I think that's pretty easy to see. Let your women, who's he talking to? The Corinthians. Not just the prophets, not just the tongue speakers, but all the Corinthians. Let your women. It's all of them. Sometimes people say, but it must be the prophets' wives. It says, let them ask their husbands at home. So these are women that had husbands. He's only talking to women that had husbands. I don't know if they really believe that or not. He's not talking to women here that only had husbands. This verse doesn't prove that all of the women he's talking to had husbands. It just means that the women here in general that he's talking to, in general they had husbands. For example, he says that they're to ask their husbands at home. Does anybody think that the only time that a woman can ask her husband a question is at home, that they couldn't do it in a restaurant? Is that what Paul's saying here? No. Here's what Paul's saying. He's saying, I don't want you asking this question in the church assembly. And he gives them an alternative place to ask the question. Typical place. He's not saying you couldn't do it in a restaurant or at Bugs Pocket Park. He's not saying that. He's saying, don't do it in the church assembly. Now, here's a place you can do it, at home. Just like over in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 34, when he tells them not to eat a meal to satisfy hunger in the church assembly. He says, if any man hunger, let him eat at home. Is he saying they can't eat in a restaurant? No. He's saying you cannot eat in the church assembly. Now, let me tell you a place you can eat, at home. That's not the only place. He's just suggesting a typical place, a place they could eat that's not in the church assembly. That's what he's doing here. He's not saying they could only ask a question at home. He's saying, you may not ask the question in the church assembly. Now, here is a place you can ask it. Not the only place, but here's a typical place. Same thing with the husbands. He's not talking to just the women that had husbands, but typically women do. Most women have husbands. He's giving a person they can ask the question to. Now, don't ask the question in the assembly, but instead, here's a place that you can ask a question. You can ask your husband at home. He doesn't mean they can't ask the preacher. Let's say their husband is not the preacher. He doesn't mean they can't ask the preacher. They could ask the preacher at home, or they could ask the preacher at the restaurant. He's not saying it has to be their husband or it has to be at home. He's just saying it may not be, it cannot be in the church assembly. Now here's a place you can ask that question to your husband at home. See that? So this isn't necessarily talking to just women who have husbands. It just all it shows is that most women do have husbands, and here's a place or a person they can ask the question to. That's all it's saying. So the your women here, I believe, it's not talking about the prophets' wives. It's talking about the wives of the Corinthians or the Corinthian women, all of them. But you know, let's suppose I was wrong about that. Let's just suppose that the your women here was the prophets' wives. I believe it's talking about the Corinthian women. But let's suppose that Paul here meant by your women that he's talking about just the prophets' wives. This passage would still apply today. And it would still have applied to all the women back then and all the women now. You know how I know that? Because whoever the your women are that he told to keep silent, he told the reason why they were to keep silent. And that comes at the end of verse 35. He says, for it's a shame for women to speak in the church. So let's assume he's talking to the prophets' wives. The prophets' wives ought to keep silence in the church. Why? Because it's a shame for women, not prophets' wives. Women in general to speak in the church. That's why it's wrong for prophets' wives to speak in the church. But I mean, that's why prophets' wives ought to keep silent in the church. Because it's a shame for women to speak in the church. Actually, what I think it's saying is that's why the Corinthian women ought to keep silence in the church. Because it's a shame for women, that is, women everywhere, not just in Corinth, for women to speak in the church. It applies today to women here, to women in Corinth, to women at North Huntsville, today. It's a shame for women in general to speak in the church. Whoever the prophets' wives are, I mean, whoever the your women are, I believe it's the Corinthian women, doesn't really make that much difference, because the reason it's wrong is because it's a shame for women to speak in the church in general. Paul gives the reason. Why is this issue important? I said I'd mention why this issue is important. Well, I think you've already got the idea based upon what some of our brethren will allow that's not in harmony with this scripture. Why is this issue important? In the Brotherhood magazines, I've read more than a few articles condemning women preachers where this verse, 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, is not even referenced. Can you imagine writing a whole article condemning women preachers and never even reference this verse? If I were in a discussion with somebody about women preachers, privately or a public debate, the very first verse I would mention, I would camp on this verse to prove that women preachers are wrong. And so when our preaching brethren write whole articles and leave this on against women preachers, they're right about that, and they leave this verse out, they're missing one of the main things that they could be using. It's important to understand the truth about 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35, and that it does apply today, because if you don't, then you cannot use it to combat error like you ought to. Do you see that? If you don't think it applies, you can't use it. And the best, by far the best passage against women preachers, you just thrown right out the door. Here's another reason that this issue is important. Because with our brethren, their false understandings about this verse are allowing women to make announcements and do more and more things in the church assembly, have more and more speaking roles, just as long as they don't preach the sermon, is the way our brethren have it. A lot of our brethren. They can do just about anything. The scripture reading, make the announcements, just about anything as long as they don't preach the sermon. So I believe it's very important to understand what this verse is teaching so that we won't allow that. We won't allow that. Now, a lot of our brethren, what they teach about this verse would really, in effect, allow women preachers, I believe, if it's taken to its logical conclusion. But they won't allow it. But now here's what's going to happen. They're going to teach this. They're not going to allow women preachers, I mean, to actually get up behind the pulpit and preach. But then later, when they're dead and gone, then the younger fellows are going to take what they said and allow women preachers. So I believe that if we don't understand this passage like we ought to, that it applies today and the different details about it. Now, our brethren aren't allowing women preachers yet, but they will. Now, how do I know that? Because our institutional brethren are having that problem. There was a forum at Fried Hardeman in Henderson in 1990 where you had sort of a debate between preachers on whether or not women preachers and women elders were allowed. Okay? And the ones that said that women preachers weren't allowed, they basically said this passage doesn't apply any more than 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5, about the covering. It's funny because the more conservative preachers were in a quandary because they were against women preachers, yet they didn't believe in the covering. The liberal ones had a good point on them. It's going to allow women to preach the sermon eventually if we don't preach the truth on this. My conclusion chart basically says there's two points to get out of this lesson. 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 does apply to the modern day assembly. And it forbids more than just preaching the sermon. As I've mentioned, it says not only is she not to preach the sermon, it doesn't say that, but not only does it teach that she shouldn't, it says she's not even to ask a question. And that's a question to learn in the church assembly. She needs to ask a question for learning purposes. She needs to ask that outside the assembly. And so in 1 Corinthians 13, when Paul said that the spiritual gifts would cease, he didn't say anything about the prohibition against women speaking in the church, that would cease at the same time. He didn't do that. So for that reason, I believe that we ought to emphasize this verse when needed and preach it unashamed that it does apply today. And don't be ashamed about it. It does apply today. Women preachers are wrong. And these other things are wrong too. It's wrong for a woman to speak in the church. At this time, we'll sing the song.